Good evening. My name is Thomas Steininger. I welcome you to Radio Evolve, our international edition of our weekly webcast. And I welcome here this week Yael Dreidel from Israel. Yael, great to have you on Radio Evolve.
Great to be here. Thank you very much for inviting me.
Yael, you are one of the leaders of an interesting organization in Israel, Palestine, which is called Women Wage Peace. And somehow the title says everything. And at the same time, it is a surprising title. It's a surprising title, one, Women Wage Peace. And second, when we think about Israel and when we think about Palestine, I mean, there's so much talk about peace since 70 years. But that's not the reality of the situation, and it doesn't seem to really get better as far as one can see it from Europe. And I would love to talk about what you and your friends at Women Wage Peace attempted to do, why you started this organization, what your experience this is, and what the specific approaches that you are doing with Women Wage Peace. So let's start with a simple question. What is Women Wage Peace in Israel, Palestine?
Women Wage Peace is an Israeli movement, and it has basically one main goal, and the goal is to end the violent conflict between Israel and the Palestinians and to come to a mutual agreed upon and a mutual agreed upon political agreement, which is also respectful for both sides. In a dialogical way, which means negotiations and non-violent. This movement, we claim that peace is possible. The dialogue is much more powerful than the force, the way of force. It's been now how many years since Israel is, we were founded in 1948, and so we have tried force many, many, many times. It did not resolve the issue. Force brings more force, and the people who pay the price are the people of both sides. And I think what happened was in after the war, in Gaza, with Gaza, in 2014, a few women, it was a very difficult war. It was very difficult. Over 2,000 people died in both sides, more on the Palestinian side, but also in Israel. It was very long war. It was for 50 days, and the whole area for 50 days was paralyzed. Nothing happened, and it affects everybody. And after this war, a group of women just came up and said, we can't let that go on and on and on. Every year or two, we have another round of violence. And the leaders already said to us, look, this is what we have. We can't do anything else. So just, you know, learn how to live with it. And we said, no, we do not agree to that. And women came up and said, we can't trust the leaders to do it anymore. We have to do it ourselves. And we have a voice as women that is not present in the corridors of the parliament. It's not present in the committees of the people who are deciding if to go to war or not. And this voice must be heard. And we're going to make sure that it is heard on all levels. Mm-hmm. And that's how it started, by taking responsibility. And the thing is, it's not like we are not the first women who are coming up, you know, getting up and say we can do it. It happened in Ireland. Women were very much involved in achieving the Good Friday Agreement. In Liberia, it was the women who made the leaders to go to the negotiation tables. In other places too. So women have power. And women have very strong motivation because they have to keep, it's the feeling of protecting your children, protecting your family, protecting your community. Mm-hmm. So this is what was in the basis of Women Wage Peace. And there was another thing, because there are peace movements in Israel for a very long time. Most of them are, at this point, at this time, are preaching to the choir. It's the same people who sang peace is needed, but they are not approaching communities who are tagged as right wing and so on. We said that we need to approach everybody, because if we are staying in our own, in the same community that is demanding peace and nothing happened, then we have to try something else. Israel is very divided internally, mm-hmm. between life, right and left, secular and religious, Arabs and Jews, everything. And we said, if we want to have peace with our neighbors, we have to be able to gather the forces within us and voice one very strong voice saying that peace is possible, peace is needed, not just possible, peace is needed for this country to survive. And therefore, we are going to do it between ourselves. We say peace between ourselves and with our neighbors. Mm-hmm. So this is, and just to say one more sentence about what is a Women Wage Peace. Women Wage Peace is a grassroots organization. We are all over the country. We have 35,000 members now, and out of them, we have hundreds of very active members from the very north to the very south. We are a non-hierarchical movement, and we work very much according to feminist principles. Mm.
That leads me to two questions. One is the obvious question, at least I would say, why women? It seems that you put an emphasis that women have a perspective that is helpful here, and maybe let's start there. Why women? What is this specific female perspective that maybe can make a difference in this?
Okay. You know, when there is some kind of security situation in Israel, maybe war, maybe intifada, maybe whatever that is challenging security-wise, when you open the TV, all men, everybody that they interview, everybody, all the specialists, all men. The women are only the facilitators, the interviewers, never the interviewed. Mm-hmm. And it's the same in the government, the Minister of Defense, the most of the members in the war cabinet, all men. And they bring a perspective of how to win. The thinking is, how am I going to win the situation? Not how am I going to find a way that everybody win, but how am I going to win? Mm-hmm. I think that women, and just to say, I'm going to talk a little bit in generalizations, mm-hmm. because not every woman is a peace lover and not every man is a war lover. Of course not. But there's something about the way women work. Also, you can see it on management. And women work more together. Women work more dialogically. For example, if you see organizations that are gathered, that the women's organizations are never violent. Women's organization many times are taking care of those who are weak, of those who need help. It involves empathy. It involves thinking about the other, communal. It's much more communal. So there's something about, and I don't know here if it's inherent or it's how we were educated. And at this point, it doesn't really matter. What matters is that that women bring to the table different focuses. the focus on how can we help each other, the focus of how can we protect our children so they don't have to go to the army, it's weird to say in this context, but love, you know, how about more love? I know it can, I don't like to say it so because it sounds like I'm, you know, this airy fairy, but it's not. There is something about the tools that women use are different. And again, we have, you know, I'm always asked about, well, how about Margaret Thatcher and how about this woman politician and stuff that are sometimes more harder or hardliners more than the men. And I'm saying it's not about a woman who climbed the patriarchal ladder and got to the top while adapting the current model. It's about women coming together and introducing a new model. Mm-hmm. And we are not, by the way, Women Wage Peace have 20% of our members are men. So mm-hmm. it's not against men. It's not, God forbid. No, we are all together. But it's about a different kind of leadership. And I think this kind of leadership, and this is, for example, in Women Wage Peace, we put a lot of emphasis on talking to the unconvinced. That means that we are all the time having to negotiate opposing opinions and create together, we create together a different language that is acceptable to everybody. Mm-hmm. We are trying to create a space where everybody can find themselves in without losing themselves. Mm-hmm. It's very challenging.
Yeah.
But if you don't do that, sorry.
Yeah. If I may come in here, because that does lead me also to the second question, because you seem to do something different here, because you are not the first peace movement, not in Israel and not elsewhere.
Exactly.
There is something that you already said in two different places when you were explaining what you're doing, that you are talking with the unconvinced. And you were talking about how Israel itself is divided,
yeah,
and how it seems to be for you as important not just to talk with the Palestinian sides and negotiate between the Palestinian perspective and the Israeli perspective. Somehow, as I heard you, it seems to be, if I may say so, even more important to talk amongst the different camps on the Palestinian side and the different camps in the Israeli side. Maybe also to mention that in Women Wage Peace, you are Israeli, mostly Israeli, but also Palestinian women. So you are together, but it seems that your dialogical approach, this seems to be a very interesting dialogical approach, is not so much to really work with the main conflict that there is, but to see what is holding this conflict in the different communities. First, is this a perspective that you would agree with, that this is a focus that you said you try to do something different? This seems to be, for me, one of the differences that I'm aware of when I heard what you're doing.
Yes, I mean, we are cooperating with Palestinian women, and also we decided together that the movement is Israeli. Israeli means that there are also Arabs in the movement, mm-hmm. but there are Arabs who are citizens of Israel,
mm-hmm.
Which is different than Palestinian who live under the Palestinian Authority. And our Palestinian friends say also they are working within their own society to reduce violence, to come to a nonviolent activism, and to put pressure and to gather women there to change the discourse in their place. We are doing it in Israel. We are doing, you see, we are not just we're just not just saying we want peace, but we are making peace because we are working on all levels. We are working
Say more to that. When you say we are not just talking about peace, we are making peace. What are you referring to?
Because when we are a grassroots organization, which means we are in the field. We are doing gatherings of women from who are dialogue between women from different communities and perspectives. We are trying in our message, in our messages, in our output, to produce something that is reflecting our diversity, that is reflecting a place, again, creating a different kind of space that is not controversial on one hand, but is very clear. I'm telling you, look, I'll give you an example now. There is the marches from Gaza, and the Gazans are marching toward the border with Israel. This is a very stressful situation. We have many members who live around the border with Gaza. We have many women that their sons are placed as stationed on the border with Gaza. We have many Arabs, and not just, but Arabs who have family in Gaza. Mm-hmm. We have so everybody is on very high alert. So how do you work? Because if you do something to protest the war, then many people see it as something that is going against the army. The army is our children, mm-hmm. also. If you don't do anything, then the other side is feeling that is saying that, you know what, you're nothing. You're when things count, you don't act. Mm-hmm. So you have to find. This is I tell you, this is the toughest job that I've ever done in my life, because mm-hmm. this is to find how in this heightened emotions, when everything seems to be falling apart, how do we find that which connects, that which brings people together, mm-hmm. that which shows that when everything seems to fall apart, actually there is a way to bring things together.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go into that, because as you're saying, this is a very dangerous situation right now, and I understand that the emotions are very high. People are dying, and you are describing how your movement is connected basically to all sides.
Yeah.
And what you try to do is to create connections. How can you do that in a situation like that, where everything is about polarization? You are either on the right side or you're on the wrong side.
Right.
And that's true from both sides. So what you are doing is against the main logic of this whole conflict, that there's a right side and a wrong side, and you have to engage and do the right thing. You try to impose a different logic to this. Is there any chance for this logic? How can this work? Is there any way that you kind of break open the logic of war that is happening right now in this? And is this some nice utopian idea? Because of course it would be fantastic if we all could talk to each other, if we all could see that we are human, if all could see that Palestinians have children, Israelis have children, that everyone would agree with that. Nobody would deny that. And still, everyone is just very identified with what he or she sees as the just cause. And also both sides feel very threatened. It's not just a rational discussion where you can talk about different opinions. You talk about a situation that built over decades, and both sides are deeply frightened, traumatized. And you can talk about the causes of it. You can talk about that, of course, it's an uneven situation. One has the upper hand, the other doesn't have the upper hand. But this is the case. It's an extremely difficult situation to find a human relationship.
That's exactly the thing. You have to find the human relationship. That's the secret.
Okay.
And because the thing is, we don't talk about history. Mm-hmm. We don't talk about, because you know, history is not, there's not one history. There are mm-hmm. narratives of history. So we don't talk about history. We don't talk about whose fault is it? We have a very an amazing partner in Palestine called Huda Abu Akub. And one of the first sentences she said to us, she said, "No blaming, no shaming. We're just working together to make a sane future for everybody." And that's the thing. So we don't blame, not our government, not their government, not this, not that. We don't blame. What we do is we support anybody who is moving towards solution. And another thing that we learned together with her, and that's it's something that a lot is done in conflict resolution, is you don't go to the ideology, you don't go to the interests, you go to the very core level of needs. What does everybody need? Everybody needs to feel safe. Everybody needs to know that their family can grow, can sponsor, that they have the basic freedom, that they have, you know, that they can. And this is where we meet. When we meet with women who are on the opposed, who are thinking very different from us, we don't start like the first meeting. We don't go and say, "We want to make peace. Let's talk about it." No, we talk about what does it mean to be independent? What does it mean to be caring for the other? What does it mean to have no mask? We're going to the basic, where we build trust first, and then when you build trust, you can speak about things that are more challenging. But if you start from the conflict, you're going to stay in the conflict.
So how do you build trust? I mean, just to reflect from my perspective from Europe, you're in a situation where one side just feels that they are terribly suppressed and occupied since 70 years, where the other side feels that basically there's this huge Arab surrounding and they just want to wipe us off the map. And both feel terribly threatened by the other side. Both feel terribly victimized by the situation. So my sense of security is directly related that I'm threatened by this other side suppressing me, or by the other side trying to wipe me off. There are a lot of arguments on both sides that I can completely understand. And there you are. There's conflicts, people are dying, they are dying ongoingly over decades. There is a situation that doesn't get any better, it seems. What does it mean to create human relationship, to create trust in a situation that kind of, as I guess, cannot ignore this conflict? You can just, let's pretend that's all not happening, let's just be a human with each other. You have to be in the face of what the situation is, but at the same time, you try to connect to a different reality between humans, as I hear you. How do you do that, or is this even the right understanding of what you try to do?
Well, I think the thing is that, you know, surveys that were conducted in Israel and in the Palestinian Authority showed that 70% want peace. Mm-hmm. If you ask them again if they think it is possible, then the percentage are lower. Mm-hmm. But over 70% of the population say very clearly, we want this to be over. So now part of our job is to give them hope. The march that we did 2 years ago, we called it the March of Hope, because if people don't have hope, they feel helpless, mm-hmm. they won't do anything. Mm-hmm. That was my own personal experience after the Gaza war. I was so mm-hmm. frustrated and hopeless, I wanted to leave the country. Mm-hmm. And the minute that I met the women from Women Rage Peace, and decided to take responsibility of my own future, that changed everything to me. That made me suddenly optimistic and hopeful. Mm-hmm. And that's what we are calling women. We are calling women, join mm-hmm. us and decide on your own future. Mm-hmm. Make your own future. Not your own, mm-hmm. Only your own, but yours and mm-hmm. your children's and everybody around you. And this is why we are so powerful. And look, when with the March of Hope, we said that we are going to bring 1,000 Palestinians to march with us. Mm-hmm. Everybody laughed at us. Organization that work with Palestinians for many, many years told us, if you get 50, mm-hmm. you'll be happy. But we said we'll have 1,000, and we had 1,000 mm-hmm. Palestinians marching with us in the near the Dead Sea. Mm-hmm. And that was because the only reason that happened was because the Palestinian leadership saw our work with the right wing side of the map, and they realized that we have a chance to bring things together, to bring this 70% together to put the pressure on the government. Mm-hmm. And they said, okay, here, we allow every woman who wants to join. Mm-hmm. And so it created something, it created trust to see so many women. We have then we have 20,000 women. Last year we have over 30,000 women and men mm-hmm. joining these marches, saying, we believe it's possible. That creates something. And then when somebody, women told us, there was this woman that said, I was so desperate. I just decided not to think about it. I just focused on my own life mm-hmm. because I realized that nothing is going to happen there. Mm-hmm. And then she saw all these women and she said, if they believe it's possible, why not, mm-hmm. Why not me? And more than that, there are all these stories of this woman that her son, he was 8 years old, and there was something in the TV about a soldier that killed a Palestinian or something like that. And he said to her, Mommy, I don't want to be a soldier. And she asked him why. And she said, because I don't want to kill, and I don't want that anybody will kill me. Mm-hmm. So women has to deal in this region with questions that nobody, no 8 years old in Europe will ever mm-hmm. ask this kind of question. Mm-hmm. So these women women and men, they have the choice to stay desperate, to stay cynical, to mm-hmm. stay non-believers, or to take side and choose for hope. And it's something when you start hoping,
yeah,
and there's a group that gives you hope, it's contagious. Mm-hmm. As much as cynicism and desperation is affecting the environment, hope mm-hmm. And not only hope, it's hope and I forgot the word. Just a minute. It's this. I'm sorry, I forgot the word. But it's the decision that you are going to go and you are not going to stop until you're there. Our tagline is, we're not stopping.
And this this kind of commitment that you're talking.
It's commitment, yeah. I was thinking about another word, but I can't remember.
Yeah. Is, of course, based on hope. And I really would like to stay there for a moment, because listening to you, it seems to me to be the key of what you try to do. Because on one hand, it sounds very trivial to talk about hope and despair, but it just makes complete sense that as soon as there is the possibility of hope in a desperate situation like that, everything is different. Because there's a very obvious logic of despair, that despair creates fear, and fear creates aggression. It's just very simple. And the complexity of the particular social political situation can be as it is. One foundational part of it is that despair creates fear, and fear creates aggression. And hope, just not a fake hope, not kind of a kind of a new age hope of something like that, but something where there is a real reason that something in a very extremely difficult situation is hopeful, changes the whole relationship to all of it. I mean, you brought in your own example, your despair after the last war, your kind of wanting to leave the whole situation behind. You brought this other woman in, and they're kind of being exposed to this cynical attitude that I guess will be most likely the overall attitude, because if there's no hope, either your despair or you try to play around with your despair, and that's basically what cynicism is about. But creating something where in a human relationship, I'm hesitant to say it because it sounds so simple, but it really makes sense to me that just building this hope in human relationships creates a whole different dynamics that allows to do something because hope is real. Is that the key of what you try to do? Because I also understand you are talking to people who are right-wingers and who are, I guess, very committed to the cause of war and the cause of whatever the cause of this one side is, and most probably also in a very aggressive way and justified in a very aggressive way because they feel threatened and feel the need of aggression as the only solution to that. So talking with them and basically making a cause that there is a reason for hope in a human relationship, I can understand that maybe there's an opening. Is this also your experience when you're doing this work?
I think hope is one aspect of it.
Okay.
I think it can't be all, because if you just, because there has to be something, I think it's also hold on a sec. I just want to be clear. I think what you're saying, hope is opening the heart, is opening the mind. It gives you more. But then what also needs to happen is for everybody, right, left, and center, to be willing to open their minds, to be willing to listen, to be willing to find it in them to drop having to protect their strong ideas. I'll give you an example again. Settlers. We have settlers in the movement. Now, in many around the world and many in the left political left in Israel see the settlers as the problem. But if you speak with the settlers, many of them want peace. But for them, this land is a holy land, and they feel that it has to be, that we have to be there, because they are religious people, and they feel that this is theirs. Now, for example, there is an organization called Roots, where it's Palestinians speaking with settlers. And we just met with a couple of them yesterday, so it's very fresh in my mind. That the Palestinian could say, I understand that the right for this land is for both people, for the Jews and for the Arabs, because we all feel that this is our land and we're connected to it. He said, I can understand the settlers' connection to the land. Now, the settlers say, I don't see occupying the land as occupation, but I can relate to the fact that we are occupying people. But they said, the land is part of my religion, but people here have no rights. And this means that I'm occupying people. And I need to work to take away this occupation of people. And then, so they work together. And I think this is, so for example, hearing this coming from them is opening something in people's mind, because suddenly they think, oh, maybe there is another way to think about it. Or, when we go to places near the border where children are traumatized, where no parents can go to work and be in completely clear mind, because always they have one ear listening if there's an alert, if, and where is their children, and are they near a safe place. It's a whole, and you listen to them, and all these areas are also struggling financially and stuff like that, because half of the time people can't go to work, or in any of these wars and operations in this area, people and places have to shut down until it's all over and all this kind of thing. And start hearing them and think how we can support them more, how we that live in the center of the country can support them more, so they are more available to consider other options. So that's the thing. It's really to open to all directions, to think, what are we, so do we express enough solidarity for each other? Because you see, for example, for the left wing in Israel, it's easier. And I'm saying it about myself. I'm coming from the left wing. Okay, this is my history. I was always, almost always, a left winger. And it was easier for me to feel solidarity with the Palestinians than with people who have different opinions than me in Israel. And now we're trying to find where is the solidarity between us so that we can create a safe place for all. So I'm sorry, I took it away from hope. So I'm saying hope is one thing, but it's also developing the ability to listen to things that are not, that are against even your own principles, without contracting.
I appreciate that, because all what you're saying just makes complete sense. And in fact, as I listen to you, this seems to be for me the core of any dialogical approach. And in the core, it's, again, it's very simple that when two people meet, something new is possible in the meeting point.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't matter at all what my set of ideas is. It can be the best ideas of the world and whatever. What you're talking about, a fixed set of ideas, and maybe the most positive and most advanced ideas of the world, if they're fixed set ideas, are in itself an aggressive reality, because they don't allow that something is really happening at a meeting point where two perspectives, two people meet. And all you're saying is to not collapse at this meeting point. And this is easy to say. It's also easy to say if the tensions are kind of bearable. But in a situation where the tensions are not bearable, where people are really at the panic point, and for understandable reasons at the panic point on both sides, to develop the strength, and of course hope plays a part in this, because if there's no hope, why should you open up? Why should you not just go with what you believe and just carry through? But what you're saying, the key is that meeting is possible, and something is possible just by listening to the other, and some creative something that you don't know what it is, and that's the whole point, that you don't know what it is,
right,
is opening up, and that makes something that makes a third choice possible that cannot open up without the meeting of different opposite perspectives. To create the strength, the human strength to do this,
yeah,
in a difficult situation like yours is an unbelievable achievement.
And yeah, we have to remind us that every day.
No, I would just think that's something to fight for, because and it doesn't matter if it's a right wing or left wing or a hardened position. The willingness to meet and not collapse in confrontation of the things that basically you despite most, that you kind of think are the most idiots or worse, the most dangerous ideas that you're confronted with. That is the point where something different is possible, and that seems to be part of what you're doing.
I think this is what we also say, because Women Wage Peace, for example, we are not promoting any specific resolution to the conflict. Mm-hmm. Because what we are saying is, if if we really want, both sides come with a firm decision to make it happen, then we sit and we find the right solution. Mm-hmm. There is a creativity, because when there is a will, there is a creativity that can happen. By the way, you asked me why women before. Because one of the things is that women don't fall back so quickly when things are not working well. If we were giving up every time we have a conflict within the movement, within Women Wage Peace, we won't be here today. Because it's the, I was just telling a friend the other day that I miss my days as a righteous lefty, because it was so easy for me to be to know exactly what I think and to tell it and to be mad at everybody else who didn't agree with me because they're just not moral enough or not righteous enough or not I don't know or not whatever I was. But I wasn't really, I wasn't, it's much more challenging. It's much more difficult to not do that. And by the way, I mean, it's fine to do that too. I mean, I think we also have to have people who scream, this is wrong, this is, but there's something about trying to do something creative, something to bring a new voice.
Mm-hmm.
It's very challenging. It's very challenging, and you have to just persist because you have to look at the goal, and the goal is that this kind of violence will stop. The thing is, look, we are in a very challenging neighborhood. While we are doing this now, Russia and America are fighting over Syria, and we are dragged into it one way or another, and Iran. And then ISIS is on our borders from all. So it's not like if we resolve the thing with the Palestinians, then we won't have to have army and we are all safe and we can sing happily peace songs. This is not going to happen. This is a very challenging neighborhood. Mm-hmm. But if we resolve this conflict, first of all, it will affect the whole region, and I suspect it will affect more than just our region, mm-hmm. because it's. But the other thing is really we are so. Anyway, I'll stop here. But I forgot what I wanted to say. So you keep going, and then I'll probably remember it. I'm sorry.
I mean, I'm just aware, as you are describing this, the neighborhood that you're in. And it's also not new. Everyone knows that the Middle East is one of the most dangerous points on this planet. And basically the worst things can happen. And what is happening in the last months even makes it worse than ever before. You think it's the most dangerous place, but dangers are just piling up right now. What you're describing around Syria and Putin and Trump, at the same time, if you are proving something there, that that hope is possible, and not just kind of a cheap hope, but a real hope, and if it's a grassroots hope, but the hope is possible, and that meeting is possible, that human meeting is possible, that some, even in a small way, creative openings happen.
Yeah.
That means something that is beyond just the impact it has in Israel. This is something because this conflict is such a central conflict in our world. It means something about human conflict.
Exactly. I think that's exactly it. And I think, we have a lot of responses from around the world, and there are marches. We just had, there was just another march in Sevilla the other day, that because something, our marches really woke something in their own heart. They don't have a specific issue in their country. Well, they have, but that was not what it was about. But it was just a yearning for peace. But there is another thing that I don't know if it's completely connected, but I think it is. It's the, what I told you about creating a new language, a new discourse.
Mm-hmm.
Because we are working on the also on the level of government, and we're meeting with all parliament members. We're trying to meet with ministers. We mm-hmm. even met with the prime minister a couple of years ago, and hopefully maybe we'll meet again. And the thing is, we are trying to change also, because when you change discourse, it can make you also look at reality in a different way. And I'll give you an example. In the last big journey, we called it journey to peace that happened in last October. Some of the events were in little town, little development towns in the south, not far from the border with Gaza, where most of the population are voting for the right, voting for Mr. Netanyahu and even parties that are more right-wing. And the mayor of one of these towns is a Likud member. Likud is the party of Mr. Netanyahu and is known to be a right-wing and all this. And we managed through an activist in this town to have him host us in an event in his town. At the morning of that event, a soldier was murdered by a Palestinian in Beersheba, which is a city in the south also. And the first thing he wanted to do is to cancel it, because an act of violence just happened. And women from the movement worked with him and asked him not to cancel it
mm-hmm.
and to go for it. And he agreed. And then we did it, and there were about 500 women who came from all over the country to attend this. And when he went on stage, he was so moved to see that so many women actually came to be with them and to call for peace, that he stood on stage and he said that the Likud, which is Bibi's, the Labor and Meretz. Meretz is the left-wing party. So he said, Likud, Labor, and Meretz will make peace together, and peace will come out from this town. So this is something nobody ever heard anybody mm-hmm. said, that these, like, right, left, and center will make peace together, and peace with the Palestinians. We will work together to bring peace with Palestinians. And the reason he said it is because we keep saying we are left, right, and center. We are left, right, and center. We are left, right, and center. So he adopted, without even probably thinking about it, he adopted this language. And he could say something like that. And it doesn't matter. I mean, it does matter. But it's not that the next day he started to work on making this happen. But for him to say that publicly in the middle of his right-wing town, he is the mayor, he needs this. This was very powerful,
mm-hmm.
and so I think there's something about you know, there's people who says, I heard it from some people who said that our activity, our talk, the way we talk, the way we are everywhere, our positivity, our hope, this is what prevented a war in the last years, in the last 4 years, because since what happened in Gaza, there was not another major war. There are acts of violence on all kinds, but not a war. And before that, it was every year or two.
Mm-hmm. Huh.
So there's an infiltration of discourse, even if women are not necessarily members of the movement, mm-hmm. it's affecting public consciousness. Mm-hmm.
I also appreciate the term that you're using, infiltration of discourse, that kind of, I mean, I can imagine that this is happening under the surface, but it does have an impact. And the story that you're sharing just shows that just providing different openings creates in small circumstances a different reality. And as we are also at the end of our time here, I appreciate very much you sharing your work, because you're sharing the focus point of the difference, how you try to approach this piece work. And at least for me, it was very revealing just to see how both the fact of what is possible when there's hope, but also of the meeting point, basically allowing meeting points to happen, because openings are happening where people meet. And the story that you shared about this mayor in South Israel is just a point in case in that. And I know they're just parts in a very difficult situation, but hearing this, I see the significance of it, and I'm just grateful for people doing this work. So thank you very much for doing this, and also thank you very much for sharing this with us.
Thank you very much. And just one little thing is asking for all of the listener, all listeners around the world, if you want to do something really interesting and challenging, find somebody who think really different from you. Go talk to them. Go try and find new perspectives. And also to you and everybody, I'm saying we're not stopping until we reach an agreement, a political agreement. So support us. We'll do the work.
Thank you so much. Thank you, everyone, for listening. And a good evening here from Frankfurt.